Frazier down the lane, baby hook, just like Smith did, and he puts it up and in with a left hand. Here come the Illini. Smith all the way to the basket, layup,
yes, yes, yes.
Nobody cut him off. Smith drives in right of the rim. Left corner, Jordan, inside to Black, had it poked away, gets it back now to Jordan. Left side three is gone. Aaron Jordan from the left side buries the three. His fifth made three of the year. Three on three to Finke for the layup. Pretty fast break there. They were patient and they found Finke. Timeout, DePaul. The Illini have matched their biggest lead.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. A full two-hour show today for the first time in several weeks on this program. Live in Columbus, Ohio at Ohio Stadium at the Shoe. Lauren, it's as quiet as it's going to be today. The only people who are here right now are staff and the security people just getting the stadium ready for the game this afternoon. Other than that, it's pretty lonely here at the Shoe in Columbus.
Well, it's a tune-up for their big game with Michigan, right? I mean, that's what really matters. That's about half the season for Ohio State, that one game, the final game of the season.
It is. And speaking of tune-ups, I mean, not to get off this game, but, I mean, there are so, like, Alabama's playing Mercer today. Auburn's playing Louisiana Monroe in the tune-up for their game next week. Clemson's playing, like, the Citadel. Like, those are non-conference games. So, yeah, this might be a tune-up because of what kind of season Illinois is having, but those three teams are playing teams they should not be playing this late in the season.
Well, that's the way it's planned. I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, as good as Alabama is, and they're really good, and I think they're the best team in the country most years, and this year included, but they do – I think that they make absolutely sure that they don't play two hard games in a row. At least they do everything they can within their power to do that. And, you know, they set up big games by playing weak games the week before.
Well, we'll have plenty of Illini football coverage today. Joining us on the program, Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch covers the Buckeyes, has for some time been working at the Dispatch since 1976, covered the Buckeyes since 84. Lauren, you go way back with him, so it'll be good to have him on the show today. Then Deion Thomas at 9:30, switching over to Illini basketball. And at 10 o'clock, we'll talk to Frank Cusimano on the Cardinals' offseason plans and how things have been going so far. And then we'll take a look back at we'll get more into this later, but J.C. Caroline passed away yesterday. We'll talk to Peter Palmer, who was on the team with him, was on the line helping J.C. Caroline have a great season back in 1953. So we'll talk to him at 10:30 this morning. But heard the highlights coming into the program of the basketball game last night. Lauren, my first question to you about that game and this morning, did you get called for a foul on the way in to the studios this morning?
I think so. I breathed on someone. It was a combination of really bad play by the players in terms of fouling and way too tight officiating by the officials. In other words, it was a combination of everything, and you would think that the players would figure it out after a while that they were going to call every touch, and sure enough, they just kept fouling, and 59 fouls. That's the same number of fouls as in the March 2001 game, mm-hmm. regional yep. game in San Antonio against Arizona. Same number of fouls, 59. And that's an outrageous number. By the way, the record 73, Illinois record for a game is 73 against Purdue some years back.
Yeah, and there are plenty of reasons for the fouls, as you just mentioned. But regardless, there's not a reason to call 59 fouls in any basketball game. It's just – it bogs down the game. It makes it horrible to watch. There was one play where they called an offensive foul, I believe, on Mark Allstork, and the guy clearly flopped. I watched the replay of it, and I was like, that's a flop. Allstork didn't do anything.
No, there were a lot of fouls like that. They were just real marginal. Too bad. It spoiled the game, but it was a good win for Illinois. Any win's a good win for Illinois. And, of course, DePaul is still in that rut that they've been in. They lost to Notre Dame by 18. You saw their record in the last 9 years in the Big East. It's 21 wins and 141 losses. I just find that to be an amazing record. What consistency when you win 21 games in 9 years in the conference.
Yeah, and that's why, Illinois and DePaul had not played in 60 years prior to last night's matchup. And I guess I'm alone in the aspect of, because a lot of people were excited about the two teams playing. I just didn't really it really never interested me that much. Because DePaul has been down for so long, I just don't see the draw to those two teams playing. I just, on a regular basis anyway, I just don't see it.
With Illinois going to 20 conference games next year, I just don't see that as a possibility at all. I mean, they will talk about what fun game it is for the fans, and I think the fans enjoyed it. I think fans on both sides really like to see this game. But it's an in-state game that neither side is going to – neither team's going to play on the other's court unless you return it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And Illinois is not going to return it. And if they did play here, Illinois is not going to return that game, so there's just no way to negotiate it.
Yeah, there really isn't. So we'll have to see what happens moving forward. Again, 82-73 was the victory for the Illini men's basketball team last night to go to 3-0 on the season. Of course, the Eastern Illinois game was an exhibition game. But another storyline besides the fouls last night is the continued porous shooting from beyond the arc, Lauren. 5 of 23 last night on the season, 15 of 65 from downtown, just 23%. And I know it's early in the season, and Underwood keeps talking that he's not worried about the shooting right now, but that's a really bad start from downtown this season.
Well, it is, and you got a couple of freshmen that aren't quite centered in on from the three-point arc, including Smith. Mm-hmm. And you've got a guy named Allstork who came over here with he shot 38% from the three-point line last year for Wright State, and he's just not even coming close, really. I mean, he's just not shooting well, and I think that you'll see Finke pick it up. Finke's a good three-point shooter, but he hasn't picked it up yet. So they're going to do better. But right now, out of 350 schools, they're in the bottom 20.
Yeah, that's not a place you want to be. not at all.
Bottom 20 in the nation, 23%.
Well, last night, Mark Smith was 1 of 5 from downtown. DeMonte Williams was 0 of 3. Aaron Jordan, 1 of 3. Trent Frazier, just 1 of 3. And several other guys missed an attempt from three, but Kipper Nichols was 2 of 3 from downtown and had a bounce back game. Had played 25 minutes last night and had 16 points. And he had some struggles in the previous game, but he really bounced back last night. And I think at a really key time for the Illini.
Made some shots against the zone when they really needed it. When they were kind of, you know, they lost LaRon Black early because of fouls. He only played 7 minutes, I think, in the first half, something like that. And they needed somebody to pick it up, and he filled in for Black in that role. I don't know what to say about three-point shooting. It comes and goes. It's that way with everybody. It's a streaky business, and it's changed the game entirely because you look at some – I looked at Missouri the other night, and Missouri couldn't make a basket. I mean, they couldn't make a basket. They had an unbelievable first half, and yet they were coming off a game where they were terrific. And I see that whether it's Illinois State or Eastern Illinois or, you know, just looking around at Indiana State, they're up one game and down the next. You just check the three-point shooting in a lot of those games and you'll see why. When you shoot a lot of threes, I mean, it just doesn't – there's no consistency to it.
There definitely is not. And I think that, Illinois is going to have to find a way as the competition stiffens as we get further along into the season. There's a conference game not that far away, which is pretty unusual. They're going to have to figure some things out. Well, let's hear from Brad Underwood last night on his team being resilient and finding a way to get things going and playing well enough to win the game.
Once we settled down and started running offense, I think we had some breakthroughs tonight. We were able to get some first-cutter layups. We were very efficient in two-man game on the backside, and then we got to the foul line.
Again, that's Brad Underwood after the game last night. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back to Plenty of Illini basketball coverage at 9:30 as Deion Thomas is going to join us today. Hoping to hear from him, and then later on the program we'll come back. I want to talk more about Missouri, Lauren, and a particular player on that squad. We'll talk to Frank Cusimano about that coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. But first, coming up, Tim May, the Columbus Dispatch, is going to join us, give us his thoughts on the Buckeyes in this game today at the Shoe. That's coming up next on DWS.
We're very close with this group of seniors, so there'll be once again, I haven't thought about a bunch, and there'll be the right time to have those conversations. But it's very well documented, our respect and love we have for these guys, because they've, it's the first time we've had a couple fifth-year seniors, too, that have decided to stay with throughout the journey, and we're going to treat them right. Best way to treat them right is going to win this game. It's well documented, and I love JT. JT's a member of the Meyer family and the Buckeye family for the rest of his life, and I just want him to play really well and do the best we can to prepare him to play very well.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kanzer. I'm live in Columbus, Ohio at the Horseshoe, Ohio Stadium. The Buckeyes and the Illini at 3:30 or 2:30 this afternoon as the Illini try to still searching for that first Big Ten win of the season. That's Urban Meyer on his seniors and what JT Barrett and the seniors have meant to the team. Joining us now is Tim May. Been covering the Ohio State football team since 1984. Tim, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How you guys doing?
Not too bad. I watched Urban Meyer press conference earlier this week, and it seems like it's really difficult to come out of there with much. He's pretty rigid. he's been around the whole time he's been here, but I was just like, man, you can't get anything out of this guy. He's laser focused.
Well, yeah, I find him to be usually a pretty good interview because he will answer questions. But when he decides he's going to lock and load, so to speak, which is this week, obviously our questions this time a week ago going into that Michigan State game are what the hell happened at Iowa, is it the beginning of the end, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, then they decimate what was considered to be a rising good Michigan State team 48-3, and it's the pat on the back questions of like, wow, man, you got, that's the game he's playing. His point was, especially on our Monday session with him, was he's not worried about anything except the next day's practice because looking ahead or looking behind is not productive as far as he's concerned. But, I understand what he's doing there. You still need answers. He answers some of the questions. He didn't like poo-poo every question, but as far as like looking ahead to the playoff, college football playoff or the Big Ten championship game, his point is there's nothing assured at this point, so why talk about something like that?
Well, have you figured out, Tim, what happened at Iowa? I'm still trying to figure it out. You had a little more time to analyze it and look back on it. What do you think?
I think a team lost its edge. Lauren, and by that, they lost their edge with 3 minutes to go in the first half. They had just stopped Iowa on 3rd and 8 at the Ohio State 40-yard line. I don't mean to get into the minutiae here, but this is literally the tipping point of the game. And Nick Bosa was kicked out of the game at that point for a helmet-to-helmet hit on the quarterback well after the quarterback had thrown the ball. And it may have been incidental, it may not have been, but the game was 17-all at that point. Ohio State had already come back from falling down early, and behind early. Iowa had already scored as many points as I thought it had a chance of scoring in that game. Anyway, from that moment on, Iowa outscored them 31-0, went up 48-17 or whatever it was before Ohio State ever blinked again or scored again. And, sometimes teams do lose their grip. But the main thing that happened there was Iowa exposed some things with their tight end play, putting three tight ends on the field at times and throwing to them, not running the ball. It really caught Ohio State's defense on the flip-flop. Everybody wants to talk about JT Barrett and his four interceptions, and they were huge. One was a pick six, one led to a touchdown just before halftime. Those were 14 points that were really the difference in the score at halftime. But then past that, the defense, got ripped up. I really didn't see that coming from that defense. I thought that Iowa was a team tailor-made for that defense to attack, and it turned out to be anything but.
You mentioned, or Urban Meyer mentioned, rather, the seniors on this team. Are there more seniors? Last year you had a whole bunch of players go to the draft that were younger. Explain the makeup of this squad for Ohio State this year.
Well, here's the thing. They've got several fifth-year seniors, including Billy Price, who's projected to be a first-round draft pick as a center. JT Barrett, who holds almost every quarterback record you can have at Ohio State and a couple of Big Ten records at quarterback. He's a fifth-year guy. Tyquan Lewis at the defensive end, he's a fifth-year guy who could have gone and probably gone at least in the second round of the draft last year. Those are the bedrock kind of fellas that he's talking about from a leadership standpoint. And the thing about it is I've always found this, and you have too. Teams that go undefeated, they have great leaders. You can't stop talking about them, But sometimes – you can have great leaders on a team that's not quite that good, yet they did, you know, in some respects, get a team back on its feet at tough times and things like that, but they don't get the same run, you know. And it's really funny. An unbeaten team has great chemistry, and a team that's 9-2 doesn't, or something. You know, it's, to me, that's always a joke. But this is a team that could have gone either way after that loss at Iowa, and they came back and stomped. They dominated Michigan State as much as they dominated Rutgers several weeks earlier. That was the difference, and that's why a lot of people think this Ohio State team, when it's got its act together, can play with any of the elite teams, including Alabama, in the nation. But when it doesn't have its act together, you know, you saw what happened.
Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Been covering the Buckeyes since 1984. Tim, let's go to that game last week, and obviously they were motivated after what happened at Iowa, but that aside, the Iowa game aside, I thought that would be a lot more competitive, but it was 35-0, I believe, at halftime in that game, and I was, you know, we were, Illinois was playing that exact same time, and I checked the score on my phone. I was just blown away how that game was just way out of reach so early.
Yeah, it was Ohio State, in a nutshell. What happened in that game was Ohio State's offensive line dominated Michigan State's proud defensive front, and Ohio State's defensive line dominated and didn't let them run, didn't let them throw. I mean, Brian Lewerke, he had looked so good the previous 2 weeks throwing the ball against, in that triple overtime loss at Northwestern, and then for over 400 yards against Penn State. He couldn't hit the side of a barn early. He was 3 out of 13, and one of those was a shovel pass. So one of those completions. So that was the difference. That was definitely the difference. They just flat got after it. And, you know, that's why it's going to be interesting today. It's going to be, looks like it's going to be rainy maybe, and the weather, the temperature is going to be dropping as this game goes along today. I hate these 3:30 starts, because a lot of times the day starts out well, and by the 3:30 it's gotten bad, you know.
You need more time to write too, Tim. After all, you're getting older now.
They don't care about us, you know, anymore, as the old saying goes. Not that they ever did, but as the old saying goes, the print media, we don't come last, we come dead last, and they're thinking, you know. And but, you know, I thought you guys were going to ask me about the first Illinois-Ohio State game I ever covered, which was 1984. I guess we'll get to that.
Ooh, okay. We had some good ones back in the 80s when Illinois was really competitive, remember?
Well, that was when I think Illinois was, what, 24-0 in Ohio Stadium, whatever the score was, and Keith Byers and then finally got cranked up and came back and won that game, what, 41-38 or whatever
He threw a shoe in that game, didn't he?
Yes, he threw a shoe but kept running, man. Like fix a flat or something.
Hey, you've got another show.
You fix a flat.
You've got another show, I know. I want to ask you one more question relative to if Wisconsin's not going to beat both Michigan and Ohio State, are they? And if they don't, does that mean the Big Ten gets nobody in the Final Four?
I think if Ohio State runs the table, you can see, you can definitely see Ohio State getting in my opinion, or you, pretty clearly, you know, anything can happen. But if Ohio State, Alabama, and Miami, I think, run the table, I think Ohio State gets in, because Alabama would take care of first Auburn and then Georgia. If Miami wins, it would take care of Clemson. You know, if Clemson upsets Miami in the, or maybe not an upset, in the ACC championship game, then I think the committee's got a real conundrum. Do you really want two teams from the ACC in your Final Four? I think if Wisconsin wins out, I don't see how you keep Wisconsin out if it beats Michigan and Ohio State in two of its last three games, if in fact it comes to that.
Exactly.
But, like, you know, the key there is that two-word phrase, win out. You know, nothing's a given anymore in college football. As my mom, 85-year-old mom, said a couple of weeks ago, and this is before Ohio State got beat by Iowa, you know, don't blink, because anything can happen anymore, because a lot of teams can beat a lot of other teams. But, hey, real quick, I get home for that Michigan State game last week, and I walk in the door, and the first thing my wife says to me is, did you know Iowa only got 6 first downs at Wisconsin today?
Meaning,
what?
Yeah.
What? You know what I mean? Not boy, did you watch Ohio State? I mean, it was like, it's still, that game will be a question mark forever on anybody who covered it or played in it for Ohio State, in my opinion, because it made no sense.
No, I definitely did. Well, Tim, I won't mention that there's a lightning chance today as well.
You know, here.
Which could delay your riding. So it should be an interesting weather day. Yeah, that figures, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for your time this morning. Enjoy the game, and we'll see what happens here at the Shoe.
You got it. Always enjoy being on with you, fellas.
Hey, thanks, Tim.
Tim May, covering the Buckeyes since 1984, the reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Illinois 2-8 on the season, 0-7 in the Big Ten. The Buckeyes 8-2 and 6-1 in the Big Ten in a battle for the Illibuck Trophy. Ohio State comes to this game ranked 9th in the country. The Illibuck series record is 63-23-2. The last time the Illini won a game in this series was 2007, 10 years ago, just over a week ago. The Illini beat the Buckeyes here in Columbus. And Lauren, I'm still just as shocked as we just talked about it, but I'm still just as shocked as the Iowa game 2 weeks ago. I just cannot believe that happened. And then Iowa didn't have any production the next week. I don't know what to expect from the Buckeyes today, but I think they may have learned a lesson 2 weeks ago, and they're not going to let their guard down the rest of the season.
Well, I think that's right. We get conditioned to these things over the years. You expect teams that are good to continue to always be good, and you know, and teams that are not, we have a kind of a pecking order in our minds that we can't hardly eliminate. You know, I'm still trying to get over the fact that Iowa went 12-0 just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and although they didn't have the schedule, they didn't play Ohio State. Obviously, they didn't have the schedule, and Wisconsin's got that schedule this year. Now they don't have it now this week. They've got a heck of a game today, and they got another. You know, they got to get in the playoff if they can get there, and they're going to get there. They're already in, and they've got to win that in order to get to the Final Four. But it's just I think we have a preconceptions about things, and everything doesn't fit into those every single game.
No, I mean, I expect Ohio State to win every game every year just because it's Ohio State. And that's just, of course, not reality. That's just not how things go. I mean, Ohio State does lose games, and Clemson just absolutely embarrassed them in the playoffs last year. The Buckeyes just looked lost in that game. With a 30-0 was the final. I'm not sure the Buckeyes will ever forget that game, but now they're – I think they're on the outside looking in. I just don't see a scenario where enough people lose and fall for the Buckeyes to get in, even if the Buckeyes win out and win the Big Ten championship. I just – too many things have to happen, but we've seen a lot of late-season things here in college football over the years, and they could find a way to sneak in again to the playoffs.
Let me tell you how these preconceived ideas come about. I was – 50 years ago, I was invited to speak to the Monticello Rotary. My dad set it up. and they said, well, what do you think about Ohio State this year in football? And I said, based on the resources, based on everything I know, I don't think Illinois will ever beat Ohio State in the next 50 years. How wrong was that?
Yeah.
Well, I did say that. I know I said something like that at that time, and I thought, we'll never beat Ohio State. Well, of course, that was right about the time of the slush fund, and Illinois was all of a sudden way down, and Ohio State was rolling along with Woody Hayes. But you know, then years came along, and we some of our greatest performances ever by Illinois football teams have been against Ohio State, more so than against any other team. Now, I'm not suggesting today they don't have a chance today, but over the years, if Illinois is competitive with Ohio State, if they're even close, they'll play their best football game against them.
Illinois has, I'm trying to find the stat, the most wins in the last 30 years from 1988 through this season. So today's game hasn't happened yet. Only Michigan has more wins against the Buckeyes than Illinois. Michigan has 12. Illinois has 9.
Yep.
And I mean, that's just, if you think about that, I mean, just Illinois doesn't beat Ohio State. That's the you know, mindset people have, but it's really not true. I mean, Illinois has won over the years. I'm not talking about today's game, obviously. You just said it. Illinois is not that. They have no chance today. I mean, a lot of things have to happen. We haven't even mentioned that Chase Crouch is starting at quarterback today, most likely, that you know, because the other two guys have barely practiced all week, if at all, and meaning Cam Thomas and Jeff George Jr. The youth and inexperience could show up a lot today in this game. What do you think?
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, Ohio State's just better at every position, so it makes it very difficult to win in that kind of a circumstance. But I want to tell you, I enrolled at the University of Illinois in 1949. In 1950, Illinois, my roommate was Joe Hall at that time, and he got knocked out. He knocked a punt away from Vic Janowitz in that game. Illinois won that game 14-7. Joe was a linebacker. Boreo was a linebacker. We had great linebackers in those days, and we fought Ohio State tooth and nail. But that was one of the greatest victories, and I've never forgot it. And all through the years, when Illinois is competitive with Ohio, when they have a team that's even approximately as good as Ohio State, Illinois plays its best game. And I'm absolutely sure of that. Saw it for decades now. It's not true now, because Illinois is not competitive.
No. One other note that I saw last night, or the roster for the Illini today, of 17 players that could be out for injury today, which and only 76 scholarship players. They have 59.
It's been that number for the last three or four games.
Yeah, but now it's really hitting the quarterback position even more. And so that's what brings that stat back out. But just seeing it again, though, just 59 available players for today's game, and you use three different quarterbacks this season. It's just it's been a tough season for the Illini, and maybe losing their ninth straight game here today in Columbus. We'll take a timeout. We'll switch back over to basketball as Deion Thomas is going to join us. Former Illini Deion Thomas was on the call last night with Brian Barnhart. We'll get his thoughts on the game against DePaul and what he has seen from the Illini so far this season in 2017. That's coming up next here on DWS.
We've got to be smarter. We can't commit fouls in the backcourt. You know, Kipper's coming to mind just reaching over the top. We've got to grow from that. And the way we play defensively, teams are going to try to drive us, and we've got to learn to play without fouling and try to get those teams to make layups and shoot contested shots without committing fouls.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. That was Brad Underwood on last night's Illini men's basketball game. 59 fouls between Illinois and DePaul and a win for Illinois 82-73 at State Farm Center. I'm Michael Kaiser. He's Lauren Tate. 51 degrees here in Columbus, Ohio, 9:32. Pleased to be joined now by former Illini Deion Thomas. Was on the call last night with Brian Barnhart. Deion, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, I have to say, Michael, we're never former Illini.
That's true.
My younger brother, I called him a former Marine one time, and he was like, hey, once a Marine, always a Marine. Once an Illini, always an Illini.
That's a good point.
How you guys doing this morning?
Good. When a Marine tells you something, you might want to listen and might want to use that in every walk of life. So, Illini Deion Thomas on with us. Deion, fouls aside, you heard Brad there, the 59 fouls, which just really bogged down that game last night. Whether the calls were good, bad, or indifferent doesn't matter. But what did you see last night from the Illini, and have you seen any improvement the first few games that you've been out there watching on the call?
You mean a comparison to last year's team or what?
In Brad Underwood's system and just growth in his system and just trying and getting more comfortable. I know it's only three games in and it takes a while to adjust, but are you seeing any improvement in his system, them learning more about what Brad wants?
No, I have. I mean, I wasn't at the Eastern Illinois game, but I spoke at length with Brian Barnhart as well as with Doug Altberger. And as they explained to me, and now what I see on the court, there's definitely been growth. Now, of course, you want to continue that growth and continue the consistency. But as I heard Coach say, you have to play without fouling. All of these kids in the Brad Underwood system are new, and they're going to continue to learn. They're going to get better. And this is when in a previous interview, I told people the team that you see now in November. And in December is not the team that you will see in February and March. As he said with Kipper, Kipper made an ill-advised foul by reaching over the shoulder. These are things that won't happen later on in the season. So from game one to game three, yes, there has been improvement. Definitely on the defensive end, I love their pressure. I mean, they're pressuring people to start their offense way out at half court. And any time that you can do that, that makes you more effective because you don't allow teams to get into their rhythm. And I understand that's what Coach wants them to do. And they're doing a really good job at it. Now, the second part of that is even when you're pressuring way out there, you have to understand, especially if you're on the ball, is that you have to control that ball handler. Last night, the guys got away from Tijon and from those guys a few times. But for the most part, I thought they did a really good job of defending the basket, contesting shots at the basket, which caused some misses, and they were able to rebound the ball last night. So have I seen improvement? Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing them as they continue to grow.
Deion, let's talk about Mark Smith a little bit. Very highly touted coming in, mainly because of the interesting different kind of recruitment where he focused on basketball his senior year, and this really blew up all season long last year. but a really good game from him last night. Got to the line, 12 of 12 from the line, 21 points. You're seeing a lot from him already. At times he's a little tentative getting to the lane, but last night he really was assertive and tried to help his put his team in a good position to win. How hard is it when you're just a freshman to be able to play that well this early?
Well, you know, it depends on who the freshman is. I mean, there's a big difference when you're making the jump from high school to college, and then again, when you go from college, if people are fortunate enough to play at the next level, there are big jumps that have to take place there. One is a confidence that you have to develop. Mark has no shortage in that confidence, which is odd for a freshman coming in the way he has. Highly touted, yes, but still stepping up to the next level and playing against, you know, guys that are, that you know, sophomores, juniors, seniors, sometimes leaves a little doubt. Excuse me. But what Mark has shown, one, he's already physically developed enough to be able to take the contact at this level, especially even as we move into Big Ten season. I mean, this kid has a Big Ten body already. Now, what he does bring, which is unlike some freshmen, is the mental aspect of the game. You hardly see Mark make freshman mistakes. And when he's that focused and ready to get in there and do what coach wants him to do, which is put the ball on the floor and get to the basket, he's such a tremendous free throw shooter that I believe this is going to be a big part of his game. And it's going to open up the outside shot, because a lot he isn't shooting it very well right now. But Mark shoots the ball pretty doggone good.
Deion, I saw you last night with Levi Cobb. Stephen Barter was there. Frank Williams was there watching his son. What's it like to see the former Illini? I call them former Illini. The Illini who aren't in school right now. it's got to be a lot of fun to see those guys, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, you know, I've just started last year announcing with Brian Barnhart, but in a conversation, I asked Brian how many guys were coming back and actually being a part of the program. And not very many. And that was rather disappointing to me. So this, being able to see guys come back and be a part of this new era of the Illini basketball, makes me feel, I mean, I'm proud and I'm extremely happy that, and I'm hoping more of the players will come back and be a part, because I think, and in my era, Lauren, you guys might remember this, especially you and Lauren, you're just a couple years older than me, but you'll remember how the younger guys were always taught by the older guys. So I think it's extremely important to have that history, to have that legacy around and in the stands and interacting with the players and the coaches. You know, as Levi said in our interview, he was like, yeah, I was at the shoot around. I had an opportunity to sit down and talk with coach. I think that's important. One, it'll help Coach Underwood, which I know he already knows and understands the history, having been at Western as long as he has, and has been a coach as long as he has. But I think it'll bring the other members of his staff as well as the players and then understand what this legacy at Illinois is. And, I mean, and it's a great legacy to boot.
Deion, Illinois plays Marshall tomorrow. This is one of seven times that they play an opponent with one day rest. What is the problem with that you as a player encountered when you had that short notice on a game following another game?
Well, I mean, as a player and as a coach, and the difficulties behind that is you really don't have a whole lot of time to focus on, say, Marshall in this point, because you've spent so much time focusing on the day before that you have one day to really come in and prep for your next game with that one day in between. So that's really the difficulty right there. And as Coach mentioned last night when we were on the post-game interview, you're relying on your players to go home to rehydrate themselves, to sit, relax, and take, you know, and relax themselves mentally as well as physically, so they have the strength and the energy to go forward in the next game. So those are two of the things that I would consider the most difficult. And if you could, your players will buy into taking care of themselves physically. I know the coaches have already prepared themselves mentally, so when they step on the court today, that they're focused and able to pick up the little nuances of what Marshall's going to do.
Frank Williams being there last night, and I want to call Damani Frank. They look so much alike. 17 minutes in the second half he was on that court. That's an overlooked aspect of that game, the fact that Damonte is out there replacing a starter in the crucial part of that game. He's an interesting player to me because he does so many things well. He's not shooting well yet, but he does. What's your take on Demonte at this stage?
Well, I mean, I loved Demonte when he was in high school. Of course, when I was at UIC, I was recruiting him. So that'll tell you how much I like him and I respect his game. But what he brings to the game is a toughness. You know, he brings that Peoria toughness out there on the floor. And what he also brings, you know, coming from, you know, the Frank Williams tree and having had his coach down there at Peoria, Coach Williams, both extremely good coaches. So he has a high basketball IQ. And you can see the little things that he does on the court. I mean, one that was a shot taken on the opposite side of the court, and who was the first one in there to grab a couple of those rebounds on the weak side because he was already in position and ready to get them was Demonte. So that 17 minutes was a crucial 17 minutes because he stabilizes you. And that's strange to say for a freshman, but that's what he does. He stabilizes the team because he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's going to create other opportunities for the team. And his shot will eventually fall. I mean, I know that was a tag on him when he was coming out of high school. People were saying, well, he doesn't shoot it very well. People were wrong. I mean, he may have taken some ill-advised shots when he was in high school because they depended on him so much. But his form is nice. His release is nice. And those shots are going to eventually fall for him and as well as his teammates.
Deion Thomas joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us on the program. Deion, shooting has been a problem so far this season. Only three games in again, but 15-65 from downtown, just 23%. How do you avoid, especially a guy like Mark Allstork, who wants to come in and wants to do well and help this team win and make the tournament, some of his goals, but how do you guard against, you know, feeling the pressure of not shooting well, especially with a guy like him and really the team as a whole, and not letting it overwhelm you this early in the year?
Well, that's really going to be more of a mental approach than a physical approach. And as they grow and they continue to grow together as a team, they'll understand that the pressure is not on me. It doesn't rely on me, that there's a we out here. And as that collective goes along and they continue to play well, it will relieve a little bit of that pressure because, they, you know, the percentage is a little down. They've gotten some really good shots. The bad part is some of those shots have been kind of forced, you know, with the hand in the face and things like that. Not that they're out there playing one-on-one basketball, but they have there's a momentary lapse at times when they take contested shots instead of making what we call a one more, which is making the extra pass, you know, in order to get that hockey assist, as some of the announcers have called. And as they continue to grow as players and they continue to grow as a team, you will see less of that. And as coach continues to preach, move the ball, pass the ball, you'll see less of that. So this is where they are, you know, and you can see sometimes the guys come out and they press a little bit, trying to make a difference instead of relaxing, allowing the things to come to them and allowing the game to come to them. And I've coached against Mark also 2 years when I was at UIC and he was at Wright State. I have full confidence that he will figure it out and he will understand where he needs to do, where he can get his shots off, his baskets, and those things will, you know, you'll see less and less of those. And that's one of the things that he brings to this table. And you know, if you take a look at, say, Kipper Nichols, for example, Kipper's threes last night, his feet were set, he was able to knock them down. Some of the other shots were coming off of I hate to say forced shots, but you know, with contested shots and hands in their faces. And as they continue to get more comfortable with the offense, like I said, and more comfortable with their teammates, you'll have less and less of those contested shots.
Deion Thomas joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Let's talk about Tijon Lucas. He obviously needs to play better. He's had some foul troubles the first few games of the season, some turnover issues. Had two turnovers last night. Had a game where he had six turnovers. What are you seeing from him? I know he's just a sophomore, but Brad Underwood needs to see more from him because of his experience, at least in the second half of the season, or at least a good portion of the Big Ten Conference season last year, to lead this team, at least at the point.
Again, I mean, it's settling into what coach wants you to do. We all know. We watched Tijon last year. This is not a kid that turns over the basketball. I mean, and not last night, but if you go to the previous game, he had six turnovers, but three or four of them were offensive fouls. I mean, so you don't really count those as turnovers per se. But, you know, you hardly see him make an ill-advised pass. You hardly see him make a you know, a bad pass. I mean, he doesn't really do it that often, but there are times that he pressures himself a little bit too much. And again, this is where I say it comes through the mental growth and getting comfortable with what Coach Underwood wants. They'll get there. And I'm sure Tijon will get there because he's already an extremely skilled player. He has a wonderful eye and feel for the game. So those things will be corrected as time goes on and as they begin to relax and feel more comfortable with one another.
Deion, talk about the depth aspect to this team, the fact that he's using nine players extensively, maybe a tenth in certain special situations. How many players is the right number for this team?
Well, the way they play and their style of play, if you can go 9 to 10 deep the way Coach has been playing them so far this year, then that's going to be ideal because he likes to get up in guys defensively. He loves having them press the ball and transition and put stress on the other team. And if you're playing like that, I mean, it's really difficult to get, you know, as a player to be out there more than 2-3 minutes at a clip. So I think where he is now and the number of players that he's playing now is ideal for him. Now, that'll probably change and that lineup will get a little shorter as you move into the Big Ten season. But when you have guys coming off the bench playing like Aaron Jordan's playing the way Kipper has played the first couple of games, you know, two out of the three games, then you can continue to play guys, you know, at a little bit longer clip. I know he would probably want to get a little bit more rest for LaRon Black and for Finke. So that's going to pull Ebo in there and allow him to play a little bit more to spare those guys. So I think right now he's in a good place. That 9 to 10 player ratio. If guys continue to grow, if Ebo can come in as a freshman and rebound and defend the basket the way he would like him to do and then run the floor the way everyone knows he can, and as he's continued to develop offensively, that's going to really give them a solid lineup to be able to go 10 deep.
The Big East looks pretty good to me this year. Villanova at the top, maybe Xavier up there, Seton Hall, Butler, Creighton, Providence, all getting good wins, St. John's. DePaul's up against it. What do you think about their future and moving into that new place on the south side? You're from Chicago. How's that going to work for them?
Well, you know, I haven't been there yet, to the stadium yet, but I had an opportunity to talk to Steve Bartow about it last night, and Steve felt that it was one of the best in the Big East. And he said that when they played that Notre Dame game there, that it was 90% DePaul fans. So if they can get their players their fans to travel from the north side to the south side to watch them play, that will be tremendous for them. When I look at the players that they have on the team right now, I think Coach Lato is doing a tremendous job from what he had to where he is now. He's made big strides. I mean, watching that little guard Roberts last night, who's coming in as a freshman from Indianapolis, man, his future is bright.
Yes, sure is.
Bright. He can put it on the floor. He can get to the basket. He can shoot the ball extremely well. And then they have a young freshman that is going to be really good, and that's Paul Reed. I mean, didn't see a lot of him last night, but as he continues to grow offensively, he's going to be really solid as well. So if you got two freshmen like that, and then not to mention, you know, Brandon Cyrus, you know, these are young players that are going to be good over a period of time. So what Coach is doing up there, Coach Lato, I think he's doing a tremendous job. And, you know, I think DePaul's future is pretty bright.
I wonder what it's like to be at a school with no football team. And that Big East is basically an all-basketball conference. I don't know. You don't have the distraction of football, and you don't have the money coming in from football either. What's your take on what it's like to operate in that fashion, as DePaul must do?
Well, again, like you said, from a financial standpoint, it could make things a little difficult when it comes to, you know, having those types of facilities that you would see, you know, some of the SEC schools have or some of the ACC schools have. Like I said, the teams that have football, because then there's that extra money that's coming in there to really help bolster your program as well. But what it does bring is it makes you the focus. It makes you that school's number one sport, which is also another good thing. And a lot of kids will appreciate the fact that they're the focus. But, you know, for DePaul, it's a little difficult because you're in the city. I mean, you're in a pro city.
Yeah.
So you're running up against it, competing against the Bears, the Bulls, the Cubs, the Hawks. You know, so all that attention is still being divided. But for most of those teams, they're not having that issue. You know, so Georgetown is the focus because nobody else is really, you know, and that might be a bad example with the Washington Redskins as well as the Nationals. Well, the Nationals have been pretty good for, you know, last few years, so maybe they're taking a little bit away from them. But Georgetown is Georgetown, and they have that history, and they're going to have their followers follow them. So from that standpoint, it's a good thing because, like you said, you're the focus. You know, people get to see you. But from a financial side, it might put you behind a few of the other schools in the country. But if schools are willing to make those financial investments into the program, then it's a good thing.
Deion Thomas, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again as the season moves along. Only three games in, a lot of basketball left here from 2017-2018 season.
Well, gentlemen, the pleasure is mine. Looking forward to it.
See you tomorrow, Deion.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
That's Deion Thomas on the call last night with Brian Barnhart. 82-73 victory for the Illini over the DePaul Blue Demons at State Farm Center. The first time those two teams had played in 60 years. 1957 was the last time they met up. So we'll continue to talk about that game if we move through the program. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back. An opponent the Illini play in 11 days has had some major issues. We'll talk about that coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser, live from Columbus, Ohio at the Horseshoe. The Illini and the Buckeyes kick off at 2:30 this afternoon as the Illini had eight straight losses, still searching for their first Big Ten win. It's going to be tough to get it against the Buckeyes today, but we're going to switch gears. We'll come back to Illini football and Illini basketball later in the show to the Cardinals offseason. Frank Cusimano of KSDK-TV in St. Louis. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Michael and Lauren, good to be with you. Hope you're enjoying beautiful Columbus, Ohio. Seems like a rough afternoon for the Fighting Illini in football today, though.
Yeah, that's why Lauren stayed back home. I'm flying solo from Columbus today. Lauren didn't want to join me. So,
yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Cardinals offseason. It was talked about during the season, maybe more what the fans would like to see in Giancarlo Stanton. It's been talked about a lot this week, been reported on a lot this week, that whether he's going to waive his no-trade clause to here and there. What do you think the chances are of, A, he waives his no-trade clause to St. Louis, and B, that the Cardinals can pull off a deal and get the Marlins to pay what they need the Marlins to pay for that contract?
Yeah, I don't think the Marlins are going to pay much for this contract. I think that if they're going to move him, you're going to have to take almost the entire deal, or it may be like $250 million the Cardinals take and the Marlins pick up, you know, the last 45. You know, I think it's a two-team race. I'm not buying Boston and L.A. and New York. I think it's the Cardinals or the Giants. I think, you know, the Cardinals obviously have more prospects to give, more young arms to give. The only thing – this all comes down to one thing. Can Giancarlo Stanton stand living in St. Louis, okay? I mean, I've lived here my whole life. It's a pretty nice city. But if you're 27 or 28 years old and you're a super-duper star in Major League Baseball – do you want to play in the Midwest? And the only people who really know that right now are Stanton and his agent. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's writing about it all the time, but it all comes down to, would he accept a move to come to St. Louis? And I think it's interesting because you can't make someone like you. Like, I may think Jessica Alba is really attractive. I can't make Jessica Alba like me, you know? Or I can't make Halle Berry like me. So John Mozeliak may put together a deal that the Marlins absolutely love. Hey, we'll pay for the entire contract, and we'll give you Flaherty and Randall Grichuk. But it all comes down to, will Stanton like St. Louis?
Frank, do you think this is strictly just Miami just wanting to just dump this contract, and they don't really care what players they get in return?
I do think that if you take the entire contract, what you'll have to give up is going to be a lot less than the average fan would think. I mean, we are talking about the MVP and 59 home runs, but what you'd have to give up is some you know, like the sixth best prospect, and then maybe a major leaguer, an outfielder. Like Phil Rogers, God bless him, from MLB, from Chicago, who really does a terrific job. But he mentioned, you know, Reyes and Alcantara in the deal. There is no chance in hell that's happening. No chance. I mean, the Cardinals want him badly, but they're not giving up those two right arms in this deal. They don't have to. They pick up the contract. They don't have to do that.
Well, it sounds to me like, pitching wins every year. The teams with the best pitchers are going to be in that final eight. And if Reyes is one of the – I want Reyes on the Cardinals team forever as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll take a chance on that he'll bounce back. I mean, a lot of guys bounce back from surgery, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they are counting – I was in John Mozeliak's office a couple of weeks ago, and they are counting on him being a starter from day one.
Now, wait, whoa. I just read where he was going to be a closer. I mean, it was going to be in the bullpen.
No, John Mozeliak has said we view him as a starter.
Okay,
absolutely.
Okay.
He said that on camera. And the thing about it, too, is I think they can monitor his innings better as a starter, where they have him learn to skip a start. I don't think they'll do it as stupidly as Washington did it with Strasburg. They just shut him down the stretch at the most important time. But they'll have him skip starts throughout. They'll make sure he's at a certain inning total. But, yeah, they view him as a starter, no doubt about it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to flip over. I want to hear what you got to say about Missouri basketball, because I saw where Jeremiah Tillman played, what, 6 or 7 minutes the other day and fouled out. What happened there?
Yeah, he just lost his poise. And he pushed a player, and you go back to the game before where he had a ton of fouls. Well, he gets in foul trouble every game.
Yeah.
That's the bad news. The good news is he goes after every ball. He goes after every rebound. His jump hook is good. He's scoring down low. Konzo Martin, every time I talk to him, he goes out of his way to say he's our hardest worker and he's our fastest player. That's saying a lot for a 6'10 freshman to be considered their fastest player. But he's got to figure it out, and I think he will. I mean, the desire is there. His attitude has been unbelievable. But he's just got to change his style a little bit on defense and not foul so much.
We've got the same problem here. What's going on with Porter? Michael Porter.
That's what we want to know.
Well, like Stanton, nobody knows for sure. Missouri plays in the NCAA, Lauren, but they're treating this like it's the CIA. All they have to do is come out and just say, look, he has a hip issue. He has a knee issue. He has a back issue. And instead, they don't say – it's almost like these hockey injuries, these upper body. Now, in hockey, you understand it, because if you say he's got an ankle injury, well, 5 minutes later, he's going to be slashed by a stick right in the ankle. But in basketball, you can't do that. And now, you know, all sorts of speculation, and I think some of this could be true. There's an element of truth in this, is that the family is running the show here. And if he's not 100%, why should this valuable piece of basketball property risk what could be happening in his future to play against Wagner or to make a trip to Utah? There's so much at stake with this guy. And, I don't know if you saw it, but that first game against Iowa State, when he played the 2 minutes and came out, they had like 3 or 4 cutaway shots of his mother with one of his brothers in the stands, and the mother's expression, it looked like the world was about to end. I mean, nobody's ever looked that pained I've ever seen in my life. So the family's very concerned about it. We don't know how serious it is, but I think it's the family that's controlling this thing. And I God bless Konzo. I'm not sure if he's got a whole lot of juice in this thing.
Frank, Konzo, I read some of his comments, and it's almost like his – you know, coaches, when they don't want to disclose what the injury is, they're usually more assertive, and they say, well, we're just not going to comment on that. You know, he's working through stuff. But Konzo is like, I don't know. I mean, he's like, I'm really not sure what's going on in terms of, like, you know, when he's going to be ready. And it's like, I feel like Konzo is, you know, someone threw something out the other day, and it maybe something to do with the investigation, the FBI, which I'm pretty sure that's not related to this. Would you say that this is not related to any NCAA investigation or FBI investigation at all?
Oh, no, not at all. And I think, you know, Konzo's got to tread water very lightly here. You know, here's the thing, is that there's Jontay Porter that's in the program, and then there's 3 other Porters in Columbia, and a couple of them are going to be 6'10", too. There's a sophomore guard who's really good. I mean, the Porters are going to be really good to Konzo Martin. He's got to make sure that he's very delicate in handling this situation. I talked to an AAU coach who said that Michael was hurt quite a bit and did not practice all the time. But when games came, he was great, as we expected. So, I guess if you're that young and you're that tall, you may have some back issues. You may have some hip issues. So, who knows? It may not be serious. He may play on Monday night.
Frank Cusimano of KSDK-TV in St. Louis joining us on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. Frank, as we look ahead here, just in about a little over a month or so, is the Bragging Rights game the last few years. It's been really down. Attendance has been down, especially on the Missouri side last season. But it's been pretty quiet, and it's just not, the excitement hasn't been there. But that's changing dramatically this year.
Yeah, and I think that, God bless Jeremiah Tillman, he will get the biggest booing in the history of the Bragging Rights game. He'll get a lot of cheers, but boy, I can imagine the 10,000 Fighting Illini fans, they're going to lay it on them. And then I can't wait to see Mark Smith, who had that great game last night with 21. I wonder what freshman from the east side is going to end up having the best year, Tillman, Smith, or Jordan Goodwin, who, although he didn't play great last night, the other day in New York, he had 19 points and 10 rebounds. Wow. As a freshman. I think there won't be a freshman point guard in the United States of America that's going to have a 19 and 10 game, and he did it in his third game.
Yeah, Goodwin is really good. If Goodwin hadn't been injured, he would have probably beaten out Smith for Player of the Year. I think that was the feeling going in. Now Smith closed so strong, who knows how it would have turned out? But Goodwin's on a really good team. And by the way, let me get the name. The kid from
Liddell.
Belleville,
Liddell
from Belleville, is going to be in Washington Wednesday at noon. Going to go over and see that game just to see how he plays. I thought he is as good as any of them. Of course, he is a forward. He's not a point guard like Smith and Goodwin can both play the point. But I'd like to see if Illinois could land Liddell, they'd be in business.
Yeah, well, Lauren, your basketball. And of all the guys in the metropolitan area, it's he and Mario McKinney the best. I think Liddell is regarded as the number one prospect. And I've seen him a couple of times. He's 6'7.5". He's got a classic kind of old-school mid-range game where he's a legitimate big-time shooter, got a big body, and he puts it on the floor. Mizzou has had him down there quite a few times, I know. And I know SLU and Corey Tate and Travis are all over him.
You bet.
That is going to be an unbelievable battle between those three schools.
Yeah, and by the way, Duke and Kentucky are allowed to get involved in that one because this guy's good.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Frank, I'm going to take you back to baseball. A couple other guys we didn't mention outside of Stanton. The Marlins are shopping their roster. Ozuna and Yelich, are those fallback options for the Cardinals if the Stanton thing doesn't work out? Are they waiting to see what happens with Stanton before they focus more on those two guys? Where do they stand in terms of their priority of those two?
Well, look, I think with all the conversations the Cardinals and Marlins are having, I think those two have to come up. Now, if I'm the Marlins, I don't want to trade those two because they actually have relatively affordable contracts, and you get a lot of bang for your buck for both Ozuna, who with his Latin American background is big in Miami, and Yelich, who's really complete. I mean, I would love to have them here in St. Louis, but if the Marlins are trying to get a lot of bang for their buck with a limited payroll, that's the last thing I would do. But the Cardinals are extremely interested in both of them. Now, in terms of plan B, Boris is representing J.D. Martinez, and mm-hmm. he's asking for well over $200 million. I'm not sure if that's the right move. I think maybe a Josh Donaldson in a trade. Good. And a Hosmer as a free agent signing. I'd be very happy with that. You get those two impact at-bats, and you lengthen that Cardinal lineup where Yadier Molina's hitting seventh, those two right in the middle of your order, that's a good team.
Frank is the sports director at KSDK-TV in St. Louis. Give him a follow on Twitter, Frank_Cusimano. Well, Frank, Lance Lynn is most likely gone. Who do you look to in that starting rotation? Now, Carlos Martinez is up and down. Lance was the most consistent guy in that rotation last year. Who is going to be the consistent starter coming up in this season?
Okay, so if you have Carlos Martinez as your one, Michael Wacha as your two, Luke Weaver, who was spectacular,
yes,
as your three, and then likely as your four is going to be Reyes, who, you know, he may have the best stuff for a number four guy in Major League Baseball. The five spot is wide open. Can a 36-year-old Adam Wainwright, coming off an ERA in the fives, have a renaissance season? I doubt it. They shouldn't count on it. You know, I'll tell you, this Lynn thing is interesting. It's 90% certain he's gone. But when you hear some of the numbers surrounding Lance Lynn and a possible free agent deal, where you hear he's only going to get $50 million in 3 years, heck, the Cardinals should reconsider things. And, you know, John Mozeliak told me in his office that, you know, this is before all this news happened. He said, look, because there's no chance in the world Trevor's coming back. Lynn, you never know what could happen. So I think they're going to monitor that thing. I don't know if Lance wants to come back. They got to get a fifth starter. You know, maybe Jake Odorizzi from the Highland area you could get from Tampa, or maybe you make a big trade and you get Chris Archer from Tampa. They definitely need to bring in one other arm.
Yeah, I wonder about Flaherty, too, because I was not impressed particularly with him late last season. But he's a guy that, given time, you see, Weaver, the first time he came up, didn't impress me that much either. But a year later, he's a different pitcher. Maybe Flaherty might be that same thing. What do you think?
You know, Lauren, that is a great comparison, because people are, at least casual fans, are kind of down on Flaherty. He was not impressive. But you got to remember, he's 21, and his numbers have been so glitzy at every stop in the
right.
minor leagues. So it's exactly like Weaver, because Weaver, a couple years ago, everybody's high on this guy, and he was so mediocre. He gave up home runs every time he pitched. But, no, yeah, that's a great example. I think they like Flaherty long term, but I wouldn't be surprised if Flaherty is involved in one of these deals.
Well, Frank, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us. We'll keep an eye on the Cardinals offseason. Definitely have to make some moves. I guess before I let you go, just – the last couple off seasons, that's been the talk. They, you know, the Cardinals need to make some moves, tweak the roster here and there, and then they really didn't do much of a major improvement that changed the fortunes of the team.
You know what the problem is? The Cardinals got a whole bunch of players that are just above mediocre.
Yep.
They got a whole squad of them, and they don't have any superstars. And I don't think the lineup for you mentioned it, Frank. The lineup for me isn't going to be good till you got then you force Yadi down in the lineup. I mean, as long as he's hitting fifth, your lineup's not very good.
You're absolutely right. In fact, we used to, you know, people always criticize Mike Matheny for showing favoritism and hitting Yadier Molina fifth. I got to tell you, in that lineup, with the players they had, that's where he probably should have hit. And that's on John Mozeliak. That is not on Mike Matheny at all.
Well, we'll see what happens this offseason. Things are going to have to change if they're going to get back in the playoff picture. I know there's the two wild card spots, but they need something, and they need a bat.
Yeah, they need two impact bats, or one if it's Stanton. And they're going to have to address the back of the bullpen and keep an eye on the name Alex Colome the Rays, who had 47 saves. He's 28 years old. He's controlled for 3 years. He would solve the bullpen right away. I mean, he would slot everybody else in that sixth, seventh, and eighth inning role. He'd be terrific.
What happened to O? What happened to O this season? Did players just figure him out?
Pitched too much.
Yeah, that.
He was in that preseason thing. You know, he was worn out when he got there.
You're right, and I think if you factor in, he just lost miles an hour off his fastball. Not that that was his pitch anyway, but when you cannot establish, you know, your fastball, you're done. And I'd be shocked if he came back. And in fact, he's going to have a tough time finding work anyway.
That's Frank Cusimano. He's the sports director at KSDK-TV in St. Louis. Give him a follow on Twitter at Frank_Cusimano. Frank, have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Frank.
When we come back, coming up at 10:30, we'll talk to Peter Palmer about J.C. Caroline. If you're just joining us or missed the news yesterday, J.C. Caroline passed away at the age of 84 yesterday. We'll talk to Peter Palmer, who was on the line and helping J.C. Caroline have that great season back in 53. We'll talk to him at 10:30. But coming up next, we'll switch back to college basketball. I mentioned earlier, the Wake Forest is an opponent coming up for the Illini in just about 11 days. They've had some issues this year. Well, if you haven't been paying attention, you might want to come back and hear what their struggles have been. That's coming up next on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. I'm live from Columbus, Ohio. Ohio Stadium, the site of the game later on this afternoon as the Illini are playing for the Illibuck Trophy against the ninth-ranked Buckeyes. The Buckeyes trying to win out this season and find a way to get into the college football playoff. It'll be tough. The all-time series between the Illini and the Buckeyes, 68-30 with four ties. The 103rd meeting between the two teams. The Illibuck series record 63-22-2. The Illini last beat the Buckeyes 10 years ago on November 10th. So just 7 or 8 days ago, the Illini beat the Buckeyes here in Columbus to upset the number one Buckeyes. But as I mentioned before the break, the Illini play Wake Forest. The Illini men's basketball team, anyway, plays Wake Forest in just 11 days from now. Lauren, the Wake Forest Demon Deacons are having some troubles. They beat Division II Queens in an exhibition by just 2 points. But that's their only win, even though it doesn't count, because they lost to Georgia Southern 85-83, Liberty 79-66, and to Drake last night 77-74. And Danny Manning has some issues out there at Wake Forest.
Well, let me say this. The advantage to losing games the previous year allows you to play a weaker team in the Big East and also in the Gavitt games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Illinois is playing DePaul, and that's why they're playing Wake Forest. These are teams near the bottom of their conferences.
Yeah, and Illini fans might remember that Io DeSumo was down in between Wake Forest and Illinois, and
mm-hmm.
I would say where the two programs are right now, and I know Illinois lost to Eastern Illinois, I get that, but I would say, you know, in just in terms of where the two programs are, I think he made the better choice to come to Champaign. This to be 0-3, and with those three opponents being the ones that you lose to, not a good situation, and I think that Illinois – the road games are tough, but I would think that Illinois has got to be favored in that game, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I would think so. I mean, yeah. But I haven't studied that. That game is too far. You know,
yeah.
I haven't gotten that far ahead. I'm having trouble figuring out who Marshall is tomorrow.
I'll tell you. I mean, that's just like, yeah, it's just what you just talked about with Deion. It's just one game after another, and the Illini play two this coming week after tomorrow. They play Wednesday and then Friday.
You know, they've got a player, John Elmore, who's probably – might be the best player on the court tomorrow, because he's been off to a really good start for them, and they shoot threes like they're going out of style. They've taken, 86 threes in three games, 86 attempts. That's almost 30 a game.
That's 21 more than the Illini have attempted so far this season.
Yeah, but they really go after it. They had 36 in one game. I mean, they're going to launch it, and if it's going in, they count more. I think they count more than twos.
Yeah, they do. They do. They dramatically change games.
Psychologically, they say it changes games, even not just the points, but the psychology. The crowd gets into it. I mean, whoever came up with this idea of the 3-point shot he's really got something.
Hopefully, a lot of money in his pocket. And people, the struggle, back to the struggles, you know, Duke only beat Southern last night by 17. I say only because we know what Illinois did to Southern. And you can't really look at scores of games and how teams are playing. But, you know, Marshall and Illinois have a common opponent this year. And so the Illini are going to have to find a way to probably continue to improve. And they're going to need more help for Mark Smith, who had a great game last night, and Kipper Nichols did as well. How important do you think it was just from a confidence standpoint for Kipper Nichols, you talk about psychologically, you know, after he had a tough game and didn't play a lot in the previous game, and then Brad Underwood had a conversation with him this week, to have a bounce-back game last night?
Really huge, because he's been a kind of a point for let's put it this way. Underwood's been on him in practice pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And more so than he has, for instance, Leron Black, more so than he has – for several other players. And I can still remember that day 2 weeks ago when he had Kipper playing with the four walk-ons in that scrimmage. You remember me telling you about
yes.
that?
Yes, yeah, I do.
And Kipper was pushed down. I mean, Kipper's been forced to – I mean, he's done some things that have required Underwood to put a lot of pressure on him. And in order for him to play, the reason he got so much playing time early, I think probably, is because Black got in foul trouble. And he basically had to play the four a lot of that time. So Kipper's a guy that we need to get help from, and the other guy we need help from is Allstork. He's just not doing anything.
Yeah, they really do. He had some moments All-Star did in last night's game where he helped the team a little bit, but he's got to find a shot. I mean, Illinois doesn't need him to average 19 points a game like he did at Wright State.
But just think about this. The first three games that he played last year, he was averaging 29 points a game for Wright State. He scored 39 in his first game. 39. Now, you're putting the ball – I don't care who you're playing. That's putting the ball in the basket. That's shooting. And his shooting right now is really below par. And it doesn't look good. It's not only they're not going in, they don't look like they're going in.
Well, he'd have to take shots to not look good. Last night, Lauren, as you know, took one shot.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about the three games combined.
What I was getting at is is he not wanting to shoot because the other two games he didn't shoot well?
Yeah. Well, I did, as far as I could see last night, he was not getting into position to get good shots. The difference between he and Kipper got in position. Of course, he was playing that high post some of the time, and he stepped out, and he was open and took the shots. Allstrok's not getting open, and that's the worst thing. You've got to get open in order to score. I mean, if you're taking hurried or forced or contested shots all the time, it's going to be hard.
Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. Coming up at 10:30, we'll talk to Peter Palmer. I'll get a look back at the life of J.C. Caroline, who passed away at the age of 84 yesterday. Peter Palmer was on that team with J.C. Caroline, and really it's kind of when he played here, J.C. Caroline had 192 yards in 1953, so fitting that Illinois is here this weekend. We'll talk about that coming up here on DWS.
There are some places that, you know, if you're a football fan, you want to see a game, and of course playing a game, and that's the case with the Horseshoe. I spend a little bit of time there. Our players know that too. So it's just a great opportunity. You know, one of the best teams in the country. We haven't played in front of a crowd this big before. And when you're a young player, this is why you came here.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us. That was Lovie Smith, Fighting Illini football coach, who spent one season on the sidelines here at the Shoe as an assistant for Ohio State. The Horseshoe opened in October 7th, 1922. Of course, had some renovations since that time. The Illini and the Buckeyes this afternoon at 2:30, a game you could hear right here on DWS. Ohio State a 41-point favorite today against the Illini. Well, Lauren, that's our third different starting quarterback this season. Chase started the season as the starting quarterback for the Illini, then was benched in favor of Jeff George Jr., then later Cam Thomas. But now going back to Chase Crouch today due to injuries. He hasn't played the last couple games at all. And previously, he was a tight end slash receiver, but now he's back at the quarterback position. What do you expect to see from him today after sitting out for so long?
Well, I think you see the same thing that you saw before. He's going to try to do both. I mean, he's going to try to throw the ball, and he's going to run it some. The danger in running him is this. Who comes in if he goes out? Who is the next quarterback?
That's
a
great
point. Whether Thomas can play? Do we know whether – I'm pretty sure that George can't play with his hand. I don't know what to expect. I mean, if Thomas was in top shape, he'd be starting. So evidently, that concussion has had a lingering effect on him, and I know he hadn't been cleared for practice. I don't know what to expect. So I don't know what would happen. You got to keep Crouch in the ball game, but as far as I can see.
Well, and I mean that's a great point. I don't know who the backup would be today. Is it Cam Miller? I mean,
Bernard Davis played some quarterback before.
That's true.
You know, he's been developing pretty well as a receiver lately.
So, yeah, he has.
So I don't know.
We'll have to see.
It's just another difficult situation, and all you can do is the best you can.
I mean, and that's just not only. Have you had, you know, playing a ton of freshmen when you played 22 freshmen this season, but you've also had a major injury factor. And when you're using three different quarterbacks, either because of injury or because of performance, you're not going to win any games. And that's where Illinois is right now. And that's why, you know, you're not expected to win the game today, but, you know, it's a concern that you don't have any idea, at least we don't. I mean, the coaching staff probably does, who the backup is going to be today for the Illini. So we'll have to see what develops here at the Horseshoe. And Ravon Bonner has had the concussion issue, you know, and he's missed the last few games. And so you get Kendrick Foster being really the lone running back for the Illini who's contributed. You haven't seen much out of Reggie Corbin, and I thought we would see more of him, and you just haven't. Are you surprised at that?
Fox 1, send.
excuse me. I just saw where the Palmer hadn't answered. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, yeah, waiting for Peter Palmer, trying to get Peter Palmer on.
I got distracted.
No.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, are you surprised that we haven't seen more of Reggie Corbin due to the injuries at running back this year with Ravon Bonner with a concussion and Mike Epstein?
I don't know what's going on with Corbin. I've never figured that out. He started very slowly, and he's never gotten off the ground. They're playing Foster, and they like what Foster's done. I think Foster's responded very well, but I'm not sure.
Well, let's talk about J.C. Carolina a little bit, Lauren, as we wait for Peter. And just what are your memories of J.C.? You know, he had a great season in 1953, 1,256 yards in just 9 games. And just an incredible season there in 1953, nearly 1,700 yards in his career at Illinois, one of the all-time greats.
Well, the thing you have to remember is that there are several factors involved when it came to the Heisman voting, okay? First of all, if you're Notre Dame, you get twice as many votes as anybody else. That's to begin with. Johnny Lattner had half the stats of J.C. Caroline, but he was a veteran player who people knew about. Paul Giel had – this was his third year at Minnesota. He was a star player. He could throw the ball. He could run the ball. He was a pitcher, a sensational pitcher on their baseball team. Paul Giel was a superstar athlete that everybody knew about for 3 years. J.C. Caroline was only known about in the Midwest. When he hit Ohio State, nobody knew about him. When he ran for 192 yards in that game, everybody was looking up from the East and the West and the South and saying, who is this guy? And the other thing is, this is a racial statement, but no black player had ever won the Heisman up to that time. Jim Brown didn't even win the Heisman when he was running for Syracuse, when he was clearly the best player in the country. And it was not until his teammate, Davis, came along right after Jim Brown to become the first black player to win the Heisman. So the voting was very much skewed at that time. So when you say that J.C. was the sixth or seventh vote getter in the
yep.
Heisman, yeah, it doesn't mean anything to me because that was just bad voting. It wasn't his fault. He should have been the Heisman winner that year.
You know, and really the lack of underclassmen running the Heisman, that went on for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
And really not.
You had to be a senior back in those days.
Yeah, and really even just 10, 15 years ago it was that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just kind of changed in the recent times where they've just finally went, well, hey, these freshmen, sophomore, they can win this award. They're just as good.
Yeah, and Paul, I mentioned Paul Giel. Illinois beat Paul Giel 27-7 that year, and J.C. ran for over 200. Now, I don't know what Giel ran for that day. I didn't look that up, but I will tell you, he didn't run for 200.
Yeah, no. So that's just sad to see that J.C. Caroline passed away at the age of 84 yesterday. And, Lauren, when is the last time that you'd really had any kind of extension conversation with J.C.?
Well, the last time, I think, was at a meeting in Champaign about 3 years ago, something like that, 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't remember what year it was, but he was a speaker at an event and did a good job. But you could tell that things were starting to happen, and he didn't have the recollection that he had had before, and that was a problem that became worse as it went along.
53 degrees here in Columbus, Ohio, cloudy skies. Not raining at the moment here, Lauren, but it was raining earlier this morning, and we'll see what the weather conditions are here as we move throughout this Saturday. Kickoff at 2:36 is the exact kick time as of right now, so we'll see how this game goes and the weather. There is a chance for some storms as well. Hopefully the lightning is way away from the area so they can get this game in with no interruptions. Well, we're still hoping to get Peter Palmer. We just talked about J.C. Caroline, played with J.C. and has probably some really good insight on J.C. and just from playing with him and being on a team with him and helping him have a great season in 1953. So hoping to get him still. You can join the program, 356-9397, or you can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. You can also listen live at WDWS.com. Send us your thoughts via email, talk@WDWS.com. And as always, a podcast of this show and others are on our website and subscribe to iTunes. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more coverage of Illini football, more Illini basketball conversation. Again, the Illini and the Buckeyes from the Shoe later on this afternoon. All that's coming up here on DWS.
Our message is to keep pushing. I mean, when you've gone through this before, you have to just have faith that if you keep doing that, you keep working and improving each day, that eventually you'll get over the hump. we've been close so many games. So a few more plays here, and we should be able to get over.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us. 10:40 here on this Saturday morning ahead of Illinois and Ohio State later on this afternoon. That's Lovie Smith on his message to the team after eight straight losses here in 2017. Let's go to the phones. You can join the program 356-9397. Send a text, the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. First, let's go to Charlie Finn, who has a connection to J.C. Caroline, who was the student manager on the team when J.C. was on the squad. Charlie, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I was kind of expecting what happened with Jay, and I hadn't seen him for some time, but I was a junior manager and a senior manager, and I was on a trip for the Ohio State game over at Columbus, and it was the most amazing performance by two guys that I ever saw, but it was principally JC, and somehow our scouting had figured out which way the Ohio State team was going to slant their defense. They would go one way and we'd go the other way. And Ohio State never figured us out. It was an incredible performance that two guys put on.
You know, Charlie, I have the film of that game, and I've seen it, the tape of it.
Is that something?
And yeah, and the blocking in the line was incredible,
and they
were pulling. And just creating an opening for JC and Bates to get through. Bates had over 100 yards too.
Yeah, he did. They had that day. He had 150 plus yards himself.
And yep. I
remember watching. I remember watching the films the following week, and they were actually more. There were actually some perfect plays in that game when everybody did everybody was supposed to do on a chalkboard,
I want to make a point here because when Red Grange was a sophomore in 1923, they had that undefeated season and the great win over Michigan, as you remember. Am I wrong on that? No, they were national champions in 23. I'm sorry, in 24 was the great year, right?
Yeah, that was the great Michigan victory in 24.
Right. Well, in 25 they weren't quite as good. And the reason Red always said was because he lost all his blockers. I'm bringing this up because J.C. had that tremendous year as a sophomore, and now you remember that on that team graduating were all the blockers was Lanzini and Ernst, Borman the center, Peter Palmer, and he had Ryan and Walbeezer at the ends. I mean, he had a heck of a team. Jan Schmidt was a junior on that team, and once they were gone, that team wasn't very good the next year, and J.C. wasn't the same player.
Exactly. We had in 53 we had really 10 really high quality linemen that could interchange and we had a lot of speed in the linemen, and they could run and they could keep up with Jay, and Jay was incredible in the way he uses blockers. But I was senior manager in 54. We were preseason Big Ten favorites because we had Jay coming back All American and Mickey, and then we had Abe Woodson coming on as a sophomore, and we were supposed to, you know, win the Big Ten. Well, we ended up winning one ball game because we just didn't have the players. And
you didn't have the linemen.
By midseason, Jay was hurt. He didn't play at all in the last four games of the year, and because he had such a severe shoulder injury, and it was such a severe injury that it actually shrunk his shoulder. He showed me years later. He said, and it never came back. And I said,
really?
How did you play 11 years of pro ball? And he said, well, I just did it, with a smile on his face. And
you remember the year that the Bears moved him over from defense to play offense one year. They lost some players, and J.C. was a running back for the Bears one year, and actually most of the time he was on defense.
Yeah, right. That was his first year, so he did play offense, and then he became a defensive specialist and a return guy. But he was, Lauren, he was the bravest, toughest football player I ever saw, yet and such a nice human being. You know, yep. he was all those things.
Well, Charlie, thanks so much for your thoughts and you insight. I appreciate you calling in this morning. Obviously, Charlie, it's been a long, long time in the Champaign-Urbana community and did a lot of different things in the community, but just a direct connection to the Ohio State game that we were talking about. So I appreciate your thoughts this morning.
Thanks.
Yep. It's Charlie Finn giving us a call, giving us his thoughts on J.C. Caroline, who passed away at the age of 84 yesterday, had a 10-year career with the Bears after playing one season in the Canadian Football League. Let's go to another phone. So again, the phone number is 356-9397. Benny, how are you this morning?
Good. How are you, Michael?
Good, sir.
How are you, Lauren?
Fine.
Oh, that's good. Lauren, I got two football questions and a basketball question, if you got time to answer them. The two-part football question is this. Now, I have been disappointed with the games that my Buckeyes lost. Now, the game with Indiana that they won, Barrett didn't look good in that one, didn't look good in the Oklahoma game or the Iowa game. And the thing I've been disappointed with about him is that I think maybe the problem is that maybe it's, you know, trying to play under a new offensive coordinator and Kevin Wilson might be affecting him. And I kind of questioned that hire at the time. And maybe the pressures of being a candidate to win the Heisman Trophy might be weighing on him as well. And I was wondering what your thoughts on that were on that.
And you should call the Ohio talk show to talk about this stuff. I don't know. Call Ohio State; they'll tell you.
Okay. Well, the other question is there's always a danger of looking ahead into your next game and not really being focused on the game today. Now, you think that could happen to the Buckeyes?
No, I don't think so.
No, I really don't. I think the talent gap is too big, and you know, the injuries and the inexperience for Illinois playing so many freshmen, I really don't think so.
Okay, well, the basketball question I got for you, Lauren, is this. I was listening to the pregame last night. I didn't get to hear everything. And I heard that Dave Lado, that this is his second time around as the head coach of DePaul. Now, was he fired the first time and then took the Virginia job, or was it the other way around, like he stepped down and took the Virginia job? Because I hadn't heard his name out there in quite some time. He'd been out of coaching for a while.
I don't know, Benny. I don't know what happened back there. I don't know whether he left, whether he was pushed, or whether he ran. I don't know which.
Thanks, Benny.
Okay,
we appreciate your time this morning.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Give us a call this morning, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. The Illini and the Buckeyes kick off at 2:36 this afternoon from the Shoe. 52 degrees, cloudy skies right now, no rain, but rain is expected. We'll see what develops as the day moves along. The Illinois' last five wins in this series have come here in Columbus, 1992, 1994, 99, 2001, and, of course, in 2007. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. We'll wrap up the show today. I'll get a couple text messages to get to as well. That's all coming up here on DWS.
Second and goal. Now they're back at the eight. They lost a yard. Good Dufresne. Shotgun snap back. Juice. Pocket closes. Lob to left. Man wide open. Touchdown, Illinois! Brian Gamble! Wide open in the end zone. And the Illini lead the Buckeyes late in the first half, 20-14. Man, was he wide open. Juice in the shotgun. Mendenhall to his left. Here is Juice. Fakes to Mendenhall. Throwing deep. Man over the open. Over the middle. Wide open. And a touchdown. Touchdown to Marcus Wilkins. Oh, the fourth different receiver with a touchdown catch. And the Illini lead the Buckeyes 27-14. The bell is tolling, but I tell you what, it's tolling for Ohio State instead. 35 seconds to go. Juice Williams is going to drop back, and then he is going to slide down back at the 35-yard line. 26 seconds to go, and counting, this one is over. This one is over, and for the first time since 1956, the Illini have defeated number one, and they have shaken up the BCS standings. Look at these Illini coaches hugging each other in the room next to us as the Illini jump all over the field at midfield. Jim Tressel to Ron Zook to shake hands. The clock has run out, and the Illini have defeated the Buckeyes.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Always fun to hear those highlights. 10 years ago on November 10th, the Illini invaded the Horseshoe and took down the number one Ohio State Buckeyes, 28-21. Just an incredible performance by the Illini that day. It marked the first time the Illini beat a top-ranked team since 1956. It also ended Ohio State's 29-game regular season winning streak and 21-game Big Ten win streak. Ohio State still ended up playing for the national championship later on that season, but just in Illinois went on to play in the Rose Bowl. But a lot of fun. And Lauren, I'm sure you have great memories from that game, and that's not going to be the outcome today, of course, but just always fun to celebrate a great moment like that, even though the program that time has not done well.
You know, I think that the eight-minute march at the end of the game was the thing that really set that game apart. I mean, the four touchdown passes by Juice. You know, the thing about Ohio State is they play such hard defense, but every now and then they have breakdowns defensively in the secondary, and that's probably what happened in the Iowa game. That's what happened, you know, when Illinois beat Ohio State in earlier years when Mike White beat them. There were some key passes in those games that Ohio State didn't always cover. You know, the 49-42 game is a great example of that when – in 1980 when Dave Wilson came in and threw for over 600 yards and set an NCAA record, Ohio State just doesn't always guard the pass as well as they should. And, you know, I guess that's true of there's no defense for the perfect pass anyway. And that day, Juice threw the ball so well in those key situations for those touchdown passes, then the final drive was all running.
Yeah.
The Illini ate up 8 minutes on the ground.
Thanks to the
heck of a drive.
Thanks to Jim Tressel calling a timeout when Ron Zook was going to punt. Otherwise, Illinois would have punted the ball back to Ohio State, and
yep,
who knows what would have happened after that. So thanks to Jim Tressel for that.
Well, he was so shocked that Zook was going to punt that he didn't have his right unit in.
Yep.
So he called timeout to get the right players in to return the kick. And then, of course, in the meantime, Juice talked to Zook and talked him into running. They only needed a foot. And, of course, it was in their own territory, and Illinois is protecting a 28-21 lead, so the thing to do, I guess, in that situation is usually to punt, but it was only a foot. And Illinois was, you know, this is an underdog situation, so sometimes in that kind of a situation, you do things you wouldn't ordinarily do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He ran a sneak for the first down, and then they just kept pounding the middle of the defense. They weren't running the outside, they were running up the middle.
Yep. Over and over again, especially on that drive. The Illibuck series continues today here in Columbus. Another big game today, definitely want to mention. Number 24, Michigan at number 5, Wisconsin. Wisconsin 10-0 on the season. Breaking records are the Badgers with this season and trying to stay unbeaten and trying to find a way to get to the Big Ten championship game and then maybe the college football playoff. We'll see what happens to the Badgers as the season moves along. Well, Lorman, almost out of time here, but I wanted to mention MJ Rivers. I was keeping an eye on him this week. Of course, he's the commit at quarterback out of Texas for the Illini. Had another tremendous game. Had 6 total touchdowns the other night in a victory. They had 4 rushing touchdowns and threw for 2 more. And an 85-yard touchdown pass and a 64-yard touchdown. And his team got the victory, and he's just having a great season and playing at a higher level competition than he had been in the past. And I don't know what he's going to be like as a freshman at Illinois if he does indeed eventually sign, but man, he's just really talented.
Yeah, he's playing at Frisco. He moved up the divisions, you know, in the state when he switched schools, and the key thing is getting him in. And he stated this past week that he's coming to Illinois. So, you know, I mean, we need that kind of verification because, you know, other people are going to be recruiting him when coach is saying he's the best quarterback in the state of Texas now.
He had 95 rushing yards and 266 passing yards and a 41-16 win as Lone Star topped the Colony and just really had it. He just blew him out. It was a close game. It was 14-9 early. His team actually trailed, but they came back and won that game. And so I like the early signing day period for football, Lauren, because that means we'll find out sooner than normal whether he'll actually be here or not.
Well, yeah, that's right. We'll know in December. And the Illini, right now as it stands, with Taylor still coming from Peoria, we think, we hope, it could be a five-way contest to see who the quarterback is next season.
Well, I mean, then you have the athleticism, dual-threat quarterbacks, and Cam Thomas, Corin Taylor, and MJ Rivers. And, you know, in my conversations with some members of the staff, I mean, now you've got some competition of some really athletic guys. No matter how young that they may be, the potential is there for down the road, and something we're not having that kind of conversation right now. Cam Thomas is here right now, but he hasn't played a lot. And so now you have three guys who can pass and run hopefully, and will grow and maybe strengthen the QB position, which has not been that way in some time, really since Nathan Shieldhouse left probably.
Yep, I agree.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank everybody for giving us a call and for the text as well. One text I want to get to from Martin from Montrose. We talked about this, but J.C. Caroline was also a great player for the Bears, coached under two coaches, lived and worked in the community, Illinois' least appreciated and most forgotten player. And Martin, I would say he doesn't get talked about a lot. So thanks for texting in this morning on J.C. Caroline, again, passing away at the age of 84 yesterday. Thanks to Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch for joining us, Deion Thomas on Illini Men's Basketball, and Frank Cusimano of KSDK-TV in St. Louis. Thanks most of all for you to listening. Thanks to Evan Kahn. Lauren, we'll do it again next week.
Okay.
That's it for today's show. Well, more Illini football coming up later today here on DWS.